The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter number 6, texts number 15, 16, 17, and 18, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on May 25th, 2009, in Phoenix, Mauritius.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter number 6, the killing of the demon Putana. Actually, we're going to go texts 15 through 18 because there's no purport for these 15 through 17. We'll go all the way up to text 18 today. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Isha Matra Grajangstasyam Girikandara Nasikam Gandashailastanam Radram Prakirnaruna Murdajam. Translation: the Rakshasi's mouth was full of teeth, each resembling the front of a plow. Her nostrils were deep like mountain caves, and her breasts resembled big slabs of stone fallen from a hill. Her scattered hair was the color of copper. The sockets of her eyes appeared like deep blind wells. Her fearful thighs resembled the banks of a river. Her arms, legs, and feet seemed like big bridges, and her abdomen appeared like a dried-up lake. The hearts, ears, and heads of the cowherd men and women were already shocked by the Rakshasi's screaming, and when they saw the fierce wonder of her body, they became even more frightened. Text 18. Balang shatashya-ur-rasi kridantam akutobhayam gopyasturnam samabhyetya Jagrahur Jata Sambrahma. Without fear, the child Krishna was playing on the upper portion of Putana Rakshasi's breast. And when the gopis saw the child's wonderful activities, they immediately came forward with great jubilation and picked him up. Purport. Here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Although the Rakshasi Putana could increase or decrease her bodily size by her mystic abilities and thus gain proportionate power, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is equally powerful in any transcendental form. Krishna is the real personality of Godhead, because whether as a child or as a grown-up young man, he is the same person. He does not need to become powerful by meditation or by any external endeavor. Therefore, when the greatly powerful Putana expanded her body, Krishna remained the same small child and fearlessly played on the upper portion of her breast. Shad Aishvarya Purna, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always full in all potencies, regardless of whether he is present in this form or that. His potencies are always full. Parashya Shaktir Vividaya Shriyate. He can display all potencies under any circumstances. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri
Jata Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajiva Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha.
It's always interesting to see what points Prabhupada picks up on in his purport. This is a very amazing point that Prabhupada has derived from this, actually. That Putana, to get more power, she had to make her body bigger, you see. A small Putana didn't have the same power as a big Putana. In this world, a little boy, he only has so much physical strength, you see. But a grown-up man, he's more powerful than a little boy. But in Krishna, there's no such restriction. As a little tiny baby, he's just as powerful as a full-grown Krishna. That's a very interesting point that Prabhupada has drawn from this. It reminds me also of Srila Prabhupada. That Srila Prabhupada was the same potent Srila Prabhupada, whether he was strong and healthy or whether he was lying sick on his deathbed. He was the same powerful spiritual master. He told us in those final days when he was lying on his deathbed in Vrindavan, he said, they say that the old man is dying in Vrindavan. But he said, but I'm beating on my madanga. He means the Brihat Madanga, his books, his Bhagavatam. He was translating the Bhagavatam, still giving purports. He said, they say the old man is dying in Vrindavan, but I am beating on my madanga and it can be heard all over the world. So Prabhupada, even on his deathbed, even when he was so sick, unbelievably sick, he was reduced practically a skeleton, a horrible condition he was in. But yet he was still the powerful Jagat Guru, the world Acharya, you see. So this is similar, that Krishna, whether he's little and whether he's big, he's equally powerful. And whether Prabhupada is strong and healthy or he's on his deathbed, he's still the powerful spiritual master. You see. Teaching by the powerful, the great Acharya, you see. Yad yadacharti shreshtas tattadeve tarojana sayat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvaratate. Whatever the great souls, the common men follow. Whatever standard they set, by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. This is the great quality of these acharyas. They are not dependent on the material circumstance. No matter what the material situation may be, they continue to act powerfully on behalf of Krishna. Actually, they get their power from Krishna. It is called Krishna Shakti. Krishna Shakti Vinanahi Tara Pravartana. That Shakti is Krishna's Shakti. Krishna has unlimited Shakti. So whether the physical body of the spiritual master is strong and healthy, or whether it's weak and sick, the same Krishna Shakti can flow through it. You see, it doesn't matter. Because the spiritual master is fully surrendered to Krishna. Therefore, the Shakti of Krishna can act through him in any condition. We often say the mercy of the spiritual master, but Prabhupada actually told us, actually the spiritual master doesn't bring his mercy. He brings the mercy of Krishna. We sing every day in the Gavastakam prayer, you see, giving the example of a cloud coming to extinguish the blazing fire of material existence. Does that water come from the cloud? No. That water comes from the ocean. The cloud is the delivering agent which brings the water from the ocean. So actually it is the mercy of Krishna. The spiritual master is simply delivering the mercy of Krishna to shower upon this material existence, to extinguish the blazing fire of material existence in the hearts of the conditioned souls. So, we have to become spiritually powerful to receive that mercy. And if somehow or other, in any condition, we receive that mercy and we accept that mercy, then we become spiritually powerful in that way also. So somehow or other, begin this process. Somehow they'll get your foothold in the realm of bhakti. Somehow, get your connection with Krishna. And once you get that little bit of connection, then that thing will grow and grow and grow. But somehow get that connection with Krishna. Everyone must endeavor for that. Somehow find a way to connect with Krishna in a real substantial way. You see, there's 9 different ways of connecting described by Prahlad Maharaj. Shavana Kirtana Smarada Vandana, you see. By hearing, by chanting, by remembering, by worshipping, by serving, by surrendering everything. There's 9 different ways. So somehow or other find some way that you can solidly connect with Krishna. And then expand that connection, deepen it, strengthen it more and more and more and more and more and more. Because unless we are solidly connected with Krishna, what will happen at the time of death? Take breath again. That's what will happen. We have to have a solid connection with Krishna. In some way, we are very, very attached to Krishna. That's a very important thing. Find something about Krishna that attracts you and connect yourself to that as powerfully as you can. Everyone has to do that. I can't do it for you. The spiritual master can't do it from the disciple. The Bhagavatam reciter cannot do it for the listeners in the class. You have to do it yourself. You have to find something about Krishna that really attracts you and connect yourself very powerfully with him. And then increase, increase, increase and strengthen that connection with Krishna. Otherwise, Maya is there. She's trying to grab us, pull us away from Krishna. If you fall over the edge of a cliff, what will you do? You'll try to grab something on the way over, won't you? A branch or something? If you find something, nothing to grab onto, you'll simply fall into the abyss. So we have to find something we can hold on to. Something about Krishna consciousness that we are very, very attached to that thing. We have to find that thing and grab onto it and hold on for dear life. This material world is a nasty place. Sometimes things go very nice, sometimes they're very hellish. We have to be transcendental to these dualities. It's not always pleasant here. Sometimes we face calamities. So when those calamities come, we have to use them as an opportunity to deepen our connection with Krishna. To take even more shelter of the Lord. And that way, if we train ourselves how when calamities come to increase our shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, then for us there will be no such thing as a calamity. You see, it won't be a calamity, it'll be a blessing. Calamities is material vision. The great transcendentalist doesn't see any calamities. He sees everything as the mercy of Krishna. Sometimes Krishna puts his devotees into fear, just like here. The Brijabasis were in complete fear and anxiety. You may say, well, I thought the spiritual world was a place of bliss. Of course, this is the pastimes of the Lord in the material world. But still, it is a replica. The Brijabasis are there with Krishna in Krishna Leela. Why they would have any anxiety? You see? One may question. Why? I thought that Krishna consciousness is blissful, but here I see the Brijabasis are in complete anxiety. How is that? Is this contradictory? No. This fearful condition that he has put the Brijabasis into in the Putana Lila, you see. What is it doing? It's increasing the attachment of the Brijabasis for Krishna. Their love for Krishna is becoming even more intense. So actually, their apparent fearfulness is transcendental ecstasy. Because their attachment for Krishna is being magnified 1,000,000,000 times during this Putana Lila, you see, increasing. It's like taking the fire, you know, and putting more, like yesterday, the fire yoga. Every time we pour ghee on the fire, it goes, whoosh. The wood wouldn't be burning so hot. When we put the ghee on, whoosh, it becomes very hot. So Krishna is pouring ghee on the fire of bhakti within the hearts of the Brijabasis when he has this Putana Lila. He's pouring some ghee in their heart to increase the intensity of their love. You understand? Yeah. So we have to see that Krishna is also blessing us in a similar way. When we face turmoil, difficulties, devastating circumstances, Krishna is just pouring some ghee, that's all. To make the fire of bhakti even burn even hotter. We have to learn how to take it in the proper way when there is difficulty. Become expert. There's one saying, peak performance under peak pressure. They also say when the going gets tough, the tough get going. So when there's difficulties, that's a time to become a hero. Heroes are not born in time of peace, they're born in times of war, when there's great turmoil, you see. Someone who can act properly and bravely during times of turmoil, they become recognized as heroes. So we should develop the heroic qualities of always maintaining our courage to act in a Krishna conscious way, even in spite of so many apparent reverse situations in this material world. We have to be courageous. to never give up our faith in Srila Prabhupada, never give up our faith in Krishna, no matter what may happen. Actually, even if we think that things are very bad, they could always be so much worse, you see. Sometimes we think, oh, it's such a bad thing, become very angry. Just like that, you know that story of that king who had his finger cut off? You know that story? Yeah. Everyone know about the king who had his finger cut off? Anyway, the king, he cut off his finger, and he was rather disturbed. But he had a prime minister who was a devotee, very Krishna conscious devotee. The prime minister said, "Your Majesty, don't worry, whatever Krishna does is all right." The king became very angry. "I lost my finger? You're saying it's all right? Get in the dungeon, you rascal." He threw him in the dungeon, the prime minister. He was so angry. So then the king, he, you know how the Kshatriyas, they have to be powerful to kill the enemy. They don't sit in the palace when there's enemy attack. They lead the soldiers. They're very brave, you see. So they have to practice the killing art to stay, you know, keep their skills sharp, you see. So they go to the forest and they kill the wild animals that are harassing the sages, like the tigers, you see. So he went on a hunting trip, and there were some dacoits there, devotees of Goddess Kali. They kidnapped him for human sacrifice. So now he's in a real predicament. He's been, even though he's the king, he's been captured by these dacoits. They gave him a bath, they gave him some fresh cloth, they gave him his last meal, nice dinner. And they said, "Okay, and then, so now we're going to sacrifice you to Goddess Kali." You see. But then he noticed, oh my goodness, we overlooked, he's missing a finger. We can't offer him the Goddess Kali. She'll be angry at us. You're offering me an imperfect body, missing a finger? They'll be, so all right, you can go. So he was so happy, he went back to the kingdom. He was, oh, this, my prime minister was right. Whatever Krishna does is all right. I must immediately go and fall at his feet and beg apologies. So he went all the way down in the deep, dark dungeon, you see, where he had put the prime minister. He opened the door, he went in there. The prime minister's, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. In a state of transcendental bliss, just taking shelter of Krishna, even though he's locked in the dungeon, you see. So he said, "Oh, my dear Prime Minister, I'm so sorry. I was so offensive. You're right. Whatever Krishna does is all right. I was saved. I lost my finger, but my whole life was saved. You see. But I see you're not angry with me. Why is that?" He said, "Well, Your Majesty, you know when you go on those hunting trips, I always go with you, and I have all my fingers. You understand? Whatever Krishna does is all right." The prime minister knew if I had gone on the hunting, if I hadn't been put in the dungeon, I would have been on the hunting trip and they would have killed me because I have all my fingers. So whatever Krishna does is all right. The prime minister, the king was saved by his finger being cut off, and the prime minister was saved by being thrown in the dungeon. You see? So sometimes we think, oh, it's a great devastating loss. My finger was cut off, or, you know, I lost something that was very valuable. You know, we think, oh, it's. But we don't realize it could be so much worse than that. And somehow Krishna had a plan for our benefit. By that, what we thought was a great loss was actually a blessing from Krishna. It was his favor, his mercy upon us. So we have to learn in this way to always have transcendental vision. In this way, we'll never be carried away by the material nature. You see. We have to give up the enjoying mood. That's the key. We have to always be in the mood of service. This is not easy to do. Because we have been trying to enjoy for millions and millions of lifetimes. That's why we're going from one body to another. Do you know that you can't even calculate how many births you've had in this material world? Since time immemorial. That means you can't measure when you entered this material world. It's immeasurable. That's why we're called eternally conditioned. We cannot calculate by the largest numbers how many lifetimes we've spent trying to be the enjoyer. So we are conditioned, we are habituated to trying to be the enjoyers. Everyone, the children, the old folks, middle age, the students, male, female, Mauritian, American, European, everybody is trying to be the enjoyer. That's the problem. And when my circle of enjoyment overlaps with your circle of enjoyment, clash, you see, fighting. That's why people fight. My conception of how I will enjoy conflicts with your conception how you will enjoy. But when we make Krishna the center, that we do everything for Krishna's enjoyment, there's no more clash, then there can be perfect peace and harmony throughout the entire world. So that is our Krishna consciousness movement. We want to introduce this principle, Ishavasya, making Krishna the center of enjoyment. By doing this, and everything becomes happy and peaceful and wonderful. In the family, between husband and wife, between the parents and the children, between in the community, then all the members of the community, the country, even internationally, the whole world can live in perfect peace and harmony. If we will simply give up this false program of trying to be the enjoyer and just learn how to be the servant, that's what we have to do. That's called Krishna consciousness. That's what we're supposed to be developing here in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So just like we check our shoes at the door, we should leave our enjoying mood also at the door. When we come into the temple, everyone is serving. Doesn't matter what our position, whether I'm the pot washer, whether I'm guru, whether I'm pujari, temple president, GBC, whatever position, it doesn't matter. Everyone here is servant. We are serving the mission of Srila Prabhupada, which is Krishna's mission for the modern age of blessing the whole world with true happiness. We have to all come and be the servants of this mission. Every one of us. Prabhupada also, he considered himself simply the humble servant of his spiritual master. And he considered himself the servant of his disciples also. The spiritual master thinks, I have so many masters. He accepts his disciples as his spiritual masters. He has to serve them by delivering them back to home, back to God. So in this way, please try to understand what is this Krishna consciousness process. Take it very, very seriously. And if you do, I can guarantee you this will be your last birth in this material existence. Even though it is stated, you cannot go back to Godhead in one lifetime. I take it that you all have been doing it in previous lifetimes. So now, pick up where you left off and finish your business in this lifetime. That is my request. So are there any questions? Everyone understands everything perfectly clear? All makes sense? There's nothing you did not understand? Everyone understood every single point I made? Everyone? You've all understood every point? No one's feeling any impediments on the pathway back to Godhead? Yeah? That is a comment. Yeah. Is a question?
Yeah, if you explain on it,
Yeah, this whole thing of becoming God by meditation is a joke, you know. It's like this so-called guru that does the hugging. She claims to be Krishna. She went to the forest and meditated and became Krishna. Now she's come out to hug everyone. It's so ridiculous, you know. So ridiculous. I went to a Hatha Yoga guru. He told us, I'm God, you're God, we're all God. I mean, it's so ridiculous. I went to another guru. He was an LSD guru. Taking LSD, he became guru. He said, everybody is an avatar. Everyone is an avatar. I'm an avatar, you're an avatar, we're all avatar. There was one guru, one of my E students wrote me, she thought this was a realized guru. She wanted to tell me that he's teaching the same thing you are. So I said, well, what's his internet site? And she sent me a link, and he was saying, Aham Brahmasmi Tat Famasmi. He was saying this, Aham Brahmasmi means I am God, and Tat Famasmi means you are God. So he said, I do not say Aham Brahmasmi, that I am God. I say Tat Famasmi, you are God. So the disciples are so foolish, they're thinking, oh, Guru Maharaj is so humble. He doesn't claim to be God, he just tells us that we are God. And they think, oh, he's such a humble guru. You see, he's so pure. He's telling us that we are God, and he doesn't claim that he is God. It's just a roundabout way of claiming that he's God, really. It's a cheating. But the disciples are so naive. They're thinking, oh, Guru Maharaj is so humble. He doesn't say that he is God. He just says that we are God. So we have to be, the world is full of these charlatans, you see. We're so fortunate that Prabhupada has given us the real thing. So fortunate. The world is completely infested with these charlatans, you know, teaching that we're all God. That by meditation you can become God. Why does God need to meditate to become God? It was even stated on one poster. We saw it years ago. We were preaching at a campus in Florida. And it said, Buddha meditated and became God. Jesus meditated and became God. Krishna meditated and became God. And now you can meditate and become God. And we will teach you how to do it. Can you imagine? That was openly stated on the poster. And people are so naive, they go there thinking, oh yes, I will go there, I will meditate, and I will become God. What kind of God is that? God is one. Shri Radha Golokananda Ki Jai. How everybody can be God, does that make sense? How many supreme courts are there in Mauritius? God means the supreme being. How many supreme courts are there in Mauritius? 20? How many? One. Why is there only one supreme court? Because there can only be one supreme court. If there's two courts, they're not supreme. Supreme court means the final say. That's all. If there's two supreme courts competing with each other, neither of them are supreme. Supreme means one without a second. So supreme being means there can only be one. You see, this idea that, you know, everybody can be God is completely, actually it's atheism. If everybody is God, there is no supreme God. You see? It's atheism. Mayavadi philosophy is simply covered atheism. That everybody, I'm God, you're God, we're all God, you see? There is no supreme God then. So we should not be misled. That one, what was his name? Vivekananda, he said, Daridra Narayan, the poor beggar in the street, he is God, you see. Do you have beggars here in Mauritius? In the last 20 years, when I grew up in America, we never had beggars, but now they're very common. In the last 20 years, America become, there's so many beggars on the streets in America also. Every time you go to a street light, there's the beggar, you know, with his little sign. He sleeps in the bushes beside the hot road, and during the day he comes and stands there and begs for money. So these are God, these beggars are God, that Vivekananda says the beggar is God. This is God, he has to become a beggar. This is Narayan, he says Daridra Narayan, the poor man Narayan. How can Narayan be Daridra? Is that possible? Lakshmiji is always massaging his feet. How he can be poor man, beggar in the street? That is not Narayan. They give all these bogus teachings. That's all. Thank God for Prabhupada, that's all I can say. If it weren't for Prabhupada, we'd be lost and confused by all of these Mayavadi rascals. You see? And this Darwin also, he's a big rascal. When I went to the UK, I had to keep some British money in order to pay for the shuttle between the hotel and the airport for our transiting through, you know. And there was Darwin on the money. The Britishers worshipped Darwin. Darwin is right there on the money. I was so happy to get rid of that note with Darwin on it. Get rid of it. That's a rakshasa, this Darwin. So these Mayavadis are rascals, Darwin's rascal. The world is just filled with these rascals, rakshasas now. So the big trouble is we still have the rakshasas sitting in our own heart. We have to purify ourselves by taking shelter of Guru and Krishna. In this way, we can conquer the demoniac nature of our own hearts and become pure. So anyway, there's no questions. Any questions? Yes.
How is it that America, being the richest country and the strongest country in the world, we can accept beggars in the country?
Yeah, it's amazing.
These people are lazy bones, they don't want to work, and just begging to get money. In India, okay, we can.
Yeah.
But not in America.
Yeah. It appears that. Of course, I'm sure there have been many sociological studies done by these sociologists. But these sort of people who are begging appear to be people who just don't want to work. They're completely derelicts, you know. Winos who drink the liquor. They have... The society, if the society was properly managed by Krishna conscious leaders, they could engage these fellows, you see. They could give them some employment. That we don't allow you to be beggar. They could give them, like they could get some plot of land, engage them in tilling the soil and plant and taking care of the crops. Give them some cabin, some simple. The government could do this, but they don't. You see, they could, and they could. Because they don't have proper government. But the government could take all these men and round them up and say, okay, we'll give you a place to live, and now you have to grow your own food. You can grow your food. We'll give you all facility. We'll seeds. We'll give you the soil. We'll give you everything. Now you grow your food and you live nicely. You see. The society could do them. They could actually grow food to help feed so many people. There's so much land sitting idle in the U.S. And these beggars could be engaged in working the land. You see? There was proper management.
But they don't want to work.
They're lazy men. They don't want to work. But make them, but don't allow them to beg. Make them work to get their food. If you don't grow the food, you will starve. You have to grow the food. Huh?
Then the country won't be a democratic government.
Democratic government, that's another thing. Democracy means demon crazy. You see? Democracy means the majority rules, but when the majority of people are not Krishna conscious, then that democracy is just hell. Democracy is a Kali Yuga institution. This is the foolishness of the United States. I mean, just a little practical politics here. You see, there was a military dictator in Pakistan, and he was taking a very strong arm against the terrorists, the Al-Qaeda there in Pakistan. But America thought, well, you have to give up your power because you weren't democratically elected. So we really want a democracy to come in. And so finally it happened. They got a democracy. The democracy is not powerful. And Al-Qaeda advanced within 60 miles of the capital, taking over parts of Pakistan. The Americans don't have these American democratic leaders don't have the brains to understand politics even. They don't have a good brain for politics. You see. They say, no, we have to have democracy. Actually, I'll give you an example. We stay in Vrindavan when I'm there. There's that MVT? So there's some flat owners there. Somehow, by Krishna's grace, I have a place there where I can stay when I go to Vrindavan. So they had a meeting of all the apartment holders. You know, they have meetings where the apartment holders can vote and this and that and policies. But we were told by the MVT leaders, they said, we're not going to have a democracy here. We're going to have a benign dictatorship on how MVT should be run. I remember Abhi Ramprabhu, my godbrother, he was the leader at that time. He told us, we are not going to have democracy here, we're going to have dictatorship, a friendly dictatorship. He said, it's much better than democracy. Because as soon as you have democracy, you have this group wants to push for this, and this group wants to push for that, and there's all these politics, and they say, okay, let's, you know, we'll have the meeting when all the people that are against our position or happen to be in Mayapur, you know. You know, there are all kinds of politics goes on. So it's actually the best thing is just to have a strong, benign dictatorship. And that's the Vedic system, you see. You have a Krishna-conscious king, and he rules. And when things need to happen, they happen immediately. See? It's not that when there's something that needs to be done, they have to call a meeting of the parliament and they have to debate it for 6 months whether we should do it or not. You see? If something needs to be done, a powerful monarch can do it immediately. That's good government. This democracy is a very difficult system. Of course, it came about because the Kali Yuga, the monarchs became so degraded. That's another matter. They say that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So, because the leaders were so bad, they brought in democracy. So in some ways you could say it was an improvement. But the best thing is to have a strong Krishna-conscious monarch. That's the best sort of rule. But we can't introduce that. The people would never accept it. We have to try to have a Krishna-conscious democracy. That's what we have to try for. We're making the voters Krishna-conscious. We can't try to bring about a monarchy now. It wouldn't work. We have to educate the electorate to vote for Krishna-conscious leaders. Krishna conscious democracy is what we're going to. So we have to do at this time on this planet. Make all the democracies Krishna conscious. Okay, that's it. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.